What is your name and occupation?
My name is Claire Fenlick, and I am a high school math teacher, and I also provide support for brand new teachers and first and second year teachers.
What are the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis? For example, your job, your extracurricular activities, etc.
Pre-COVID or post-COVID?
Both.
Okay. My normal life before COVID was usually get up around 5:30, go to the gym, get to school around 6:30 or 7, do work for like an hour, and then sometimes I'd have like an L block. So at my school, sometimes the math classes had like a double block, and then teach. I taught statistics and an accelerated geometry with Algebra 2 course at an independent school in Baltimore this year. So I would do that, meet with like kids, parents, faculty meetings, department meetings. I ran like a girl STEM program. So I do like all kinds of stuff for that. Ran like an eco justice program, worked on the equity and inclusion committee. So I have meetings like most of my free periods or lunches. After school, would like meet with kids. Then go to the gym again, usually if I didn't have another meeting. Go home, make dinner, grade and plan for a few hours, sleep by 10. I'm like active in my church. So I go to Bible study once a week, go to church on Sundays, see my family, friends, mostly on weekends. It's like hard to see people during the week. Post-COVID was a lot more crazy. Thankfully, like our school had, was one-to-one, so kids already had computers. So it was just a lot more like making sure kids were mentally and emotionally okay and that their families were. And so my day would start a little bit later, but my hours were a lot crazier because I'd be interacting with students and families like online from like 8 to 8 most days, and it was like harder to kind of have that like rhythm and balance. I ended up moving in with a friend and their fiance so that I wouldn't be alone because I like lived by myself a lot of the time. So yeah, COVID has looked a little bit different for sure. And now it's summer. So in the summer, I usually train new teachers for Teach for America. So I did that this summer too.
Where do you live and what is it like to live there?
I live in Baltimore, Maryland. I bought my first house like 2 years ago. And I really like living there. I think Baltimore is a city that has a lot of economic disparities and is really racially segregated. So I live in a lower income Black neighborhood near to where I go to church and close to where I used to teach, but pretty far from where I teach now because I teach at a really upper income, predominantly white school. I don't know what else to ask. Well, can you repeat the question? I feel like I missed part of it.
Where do you live and what is it like to live there?
Yeah, that's all the same.
When you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it? How have your thoughts changed since then?
That's so hard to remember. It was kind of a crazy time because at my school, it was like the day before we were supposed to go to spring break. And so we were at the last period of the day and the school just like told the kids to go home early and that they weren't going to come back. But that teachers were going to come back the next day. It was like on a Thursday. So like kids normally would come back Friday and then we start spring break. So kids came back Friday and we like didn't really know anything. And we just had a bunch of meetings about like what we could do. And I remember it was like a mindset of like, oh, this is gonna be like 2 to 3 weeks. So like maybe we'll be gone for spring break and then have another week of like online learning and then we'll be fine. And I think now my thoughts, I guess, have really changed. Like it seems like we're in this for the long haul. And so it's not just these like stopgap measures of like, how do we replicate the learning experience for kids, but a lot more of like, how do we rethink what we think about education and how we deliver quality instruction? And so a lot of the way I'm like planning and delivering instruction and thinking about how I'm going to do that in the fall is like dramatically different than when I first heard about COVID. I think, like, personally, it felt like, I think it's feeling more and more scary and real because I'm starting to know more and more people who have been diagnosed with it. And so that's been, like, hard to try to navigate and think through, like, what that means. I think especially as, like, a younger person who, like, doesn't have a family yet, navigating, like, how to still see people, that part has been different, and definitely, like, have had different feelings about that throughout this COVID experience.
So transitioning to your employment, how many years have you worked in a K through 12 setting, and what initially made you want to work with children?
I've worked in the K through 12 setting for the last 5 years for my full-time employment. As soon as I graduated from college, I joined Teach for America, and so I started teaching in Baltimore, Maryland, and getting my master's full-time at Johns Hopkins concurrently. And then after that, I went to a charter school, and I'm now at an independent school. So I've worked in, like, all different types of school settings over the last 5 years, and worked with, like, new teacher coaching and new teacher preparation over the last 3 years, I would say. What initially drew me was I am from a really diverse city in California, and so my high school had the biggest, opportunity gap in the state of California. We used to call it the achievement gap. White and Asian students outperform Black and Brown students by the biggest margin at my high school. And so I grew up in a low-income, predominantly Black and Brown neighborhood. And so in our third year of college, I was originally a business economics major, and I realized that none of my friends that I knew from home, from my neighborhood, were still in college at that point. And I realized that I, like, couldn't go work for Deloitte or do, like, financial consulting, and so I decided to change my major to education. And I chose Teach for America just because it was the cheapest option to get my master's. I knew that I really wanted to teach. And so I was thinking about applying to different UC programs or Cal State, but after I was accepted as a junior, it just didn't financially make sense to go, like, $60,000 into debt when I could make a salary for 2 years and get the same quality of education at Johns Hopkins for free.
Has the COVID-19 pandemic changed your employment status? If so, in what ways?
Not dramatically. I mean, it's changed, like, how my employment looks. In that it's looking like it'll be mostly virtual, although working at a private school, I think there's a lot more pressure to go back in person. So, like, our pre-K or, like, our preschool and then, like, pre-K through 7th or 8th grade are all going to go back in person. And then the high school is, like, unsure yet if we're going to go back. So that, I think, will potentially change my employment, because I know a lot of the older teachers at my school are not planning on going back if it's in person. And so I could see that, like, affecting my job a lot. In terms of, like, salary, they did, they had, like, a big financial crisis for the quarter where COVID was hit. So I think they were, like, $500,000 short of their, like, projected budget. And so we didn't get our, like, contractual raises for the year. So in terms of, like, that regard, that, like, changed my pay on that slightly, I guess. But they, like, hired me to do an additional position, which I guess is also COVID related. So I'm now, like, the head of technology for the high school, and support, like, tech integration, and, like, meet with our outside consulting firm of, like, how to do that. So I guess I, like, got an added position right now because of COVID. So kind of up and down.
Has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the employment status of others in your school district? If so, in what ways?
In my school district, not as much. So at the independent school I work at, they let go of some teaching fellows and people who are part-time because they just needed more full-time teachers. Because they're trying to come back in person, they just want to reduce class sizes, so they need a lot more full-time teachers. So that did impact people's positions. And my school is also going through a bunch of, like, equity issues. So they've changed the employment for different people in the, like, diversity, equity, and inclusion office. For the Baltimore City School District, employment hasn't really changed, but they also haven't really figured out what they're going to do yet. Typically, Baltimore City always has a huge shortage of teachers, and so I anticipate that will be the same this year, and maybe more so because if the city tries to encourage teachers to go back in person, our union is really strong and probably won't allow that, and many teachers will leave as a result. So,
what concerns do you have about the effects of COVID-19 on your employment and school funding?
For the independent school, I mean, I worry that, like, if we don't go back, like, parents are not going to pay $40,000 a year for their kids to, like, have online learning. So, I worry that if my school, like, makes that decision that we're not going to make it. For the public school district, we are, like, a Democratic city, but we have a Republican governor who's pretty anti-Baltimore City. And so the legislature had just passed a, like, radical reallocation of funding to be more equitable for the city, and the governor vetoed it, using COVID as an excuse. And so I'm worried that, like, students in the city and teachers in the city are not going to get the funding that they deserve and that the legislature wanted them to have. It's called the Kerwin Commission, if you, like, want to look it up, for the Kerwin funding. That's going to have, like, a huge impact, and particularly for students in Baltimore City, where there's such a resource gap. Most students, or not most, but a lot of students don't have access to the technology they need. And so I think the, like, achievement data is going to just keep getting further and further apart. I, like, tutor a few students privately right now also, as a result of COVID, and that felt really weird because I know that my students from Baltimore City are, like, not receiving that. And so, like, for my private school students, they had no experience, no learning loss as a result, because we still met, like, we met all of the scope and sequence I had for the year. Whereas for my students who are in Baltimore City and talking with their teachers, they didn't really have access to education for the last quarter. And particularly if they didn't have access to technology, they didn't have anything that they could do. And so I'm just really worried that the achievement data is going to get further and further apart.
Did your school district close because of COVID-19? Who made this decision and when did it occur?
So for the independent school that I work at, there's, like, a consortium of all the, like, private or independent schools in Baltimore City. And that decision was kind of made collectively, and it was made, I want to say, on, like, March 11th or 12th. It was very early on. And it was because it was, like, right before most people's spring break. The city closed the next day after. And they were closed by force from the state. So the city had actually earlier in the day made a press release that they were not going to close. And then the governor came out 2 hours later saying they were going to close, which, like, undercut a lot of the work the city was trying to do. And was evident that they weren't talking to each other. So for Baltimore City, the governor made the decision. And for my particular school, the head of school, in conjunction with the other heads of the private school, made that decision.
How did you, your coworkers, students, and parents respond to news of the closure?
I think everyone was, like, glad that we were closed because it was starting to feel more unsafe. Like, we had 3 students who went to the, like, I don't know, it was some, like, RNC convention where they were, like, with people who had COVID. We have, like, multiple students who are exchange students from China who, like, hadn't been able to go home for a long time, because the virus was more prevalent there earlier on. And so I think it was something a lot of people have been fearful about for weeks. So to finally get the decision that it was closed was good. I think it then, like, created a lot more questions, like it did for many people, around, like, how do we respond to that and how do we prepare when we don't have the time to adequately prepare? How do we, like, meet the needs of this, like, giant crisis that's creating, like, mental health and emotional issues for kids and families? We have a lot of families who work in healthcare, and so their living situations were dramatically different. Kids had increased responsibilities, but we also want to, like, honor the, like, trust parents and families have put in us to continue students' academics. So I think it's really been a balancing act that, like, sometimes has felt good for us as teachers and students, and sometimes has felt like too much work or not enough work for students who are bored. So I think it's been a really mixed bag.
Who should be responsible for making decisions about school closures? Explain whether you believe the decision should be made by local school districts, county offices of education, state officials, federal officials, or another agency.
I think it really depends where you live. Like, I think, so Maryland's a relatively rural state, but Baltimore City, and then, which is its own county, even though it's Baltimore City, and then the counties further south, PG County and Montgomery and Howard County, which are really close, like DC suburbs, they are just have like a ton of diverse students and are a lot more densely populated. And so I think it would be hard to make that decision at a state level, because what's true for the remaining counties is they're very rural and spread out, and people don't move around as much. And so I think what might be true on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is super rural, is very different than what's going to be true in PG County. And so I think, at least in my state context, it makes a lot of sense to have counties make that decision rather than state level, because everyone's reality is so different. But I think that decision like needs to include a lot more parents and teachers. And I always lean more towards like parents and families making those decisions, because we're really here to serve them and like meet their needs. And yes, like teaching is my job and my profession and I love it. But at the end of the day, like I'm there to serve families and communities. And so if my families want to have in-person education, then that's part of like me as a professional deciding if I'm comfortable with that risk or not. But I don't think it's on me as the teacher to decide if we should be going back or not. Like, I'm not a healthcare professional. So I would like to see counties making that decision in conjunction with healthcare professionals while like listening to what the needs of families. I don't necessarily think that it's the role of teacher. I think teachers can help once the decision is made of like, how do we educate these kids? That's where like our expertise is. But my expertise is not in deciding whether or not to close schools.
How would you compare the effectiveness of distance learning to in-person learning?
I think how we did it in the spring for most people was not effective. I think we tried to replicate in-person strategies, which you just like can't do in distance learning. And so I have been thinking a lot about like, there are a lot of assets we have in distance learning that we haven't truly like thought all the way through. And so some things I'm thinking about as a math teacher is it's really easy for students to access information. And so I can actually push them to have better critical thinking skills through comparing methods, because they can watch like three different videos about the same concept and compare the merits, which is a really different conversation than we could have in person when they're just hearing me explain something one or two different ways. And so I think if we want to like be successful in this, and I think it has the power to be really successful, we have to focus on like differentiation so that we're actually meeting the needs of all students and changing assignments based off what kids need. That's one of the like best things about distance learning is no student knows what the other student is doing. And so you can meet kids where they're at. I think the other aspect is using more of a flipped classroom model. And so teachers need to be better facilitators rather than lecturers, which has always been the case in education, but I think a lot of us still default to lecturing. And so I'd love to see us actually really think through, like, how do we make distance learning be as, if not more impactful than in-person learning?
How has your school district ensured equal access to distance learning materials for students of all ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds?
So again, like, my unique school context is an independent school, and so we are already one-to-one. When students come, they have that. We did have some students who didn't have access to internet. And so the school like provided internet for them. In Baltimore City, the city struck a deal with Xfinity to provide like hotspots for the entire city. And that's about to lapse. And so that's going to be really problematic in the fall if they don't reach some kind of deal. For city kids, most of them did not have access to technology. And so students were doing things with phones. Teachers were trying to drop off packets. Students were supposed to come to school to do packets or to pick up packets and food, but it was a mess, and like students did not have equal access to resources at all.
How has distance learning affected students' academic progress?
I don't have hard data for the city, so I can't really say more, like, beyond from anecdotally talking to teachers. Most of my friends would see maybe 25 to 50% of their students. So 50 to 75% of students just, like, didn't learn during that semester. For my students, it was interesting. Again, like, access was not as much of an issue, but engagement was, particularly my students with learning differences, especially like ADHD or other executive functioning. They really struggled to stay organized, and I saw their grades drop dramatically. But for other students who are maybe like more introverted or just like process better through reading more or watching videos, I saw some students actually do a lot better in distance learning because they had more time to self-pace. And they could use a lot of different resources. So it really depended on the kid and how they learned.
What have you learned about yourself or your students through distance learning?
I learned that my kids are like super adaptable. And also they really love community. So I use my synchronous time with my students to just do a lot of community building. And that was like their favorite time. And they always ask for more time to just like sit on Zoom and do work together. And so that was really cool to see that the work I'd put in at the beginning of the year to build community really came alive. And we kept doing a lot of those things together. So they made like virtual yearbooks for each other and would give each other shout outs and would go into breakout rooms just so they could like sit and do math together. So that was like awesome to see that they really like craved being around each other and doing math together. So that was awesome. I think about myself is I'm more adaptable than I knew. I'm more creative, but I definitely, this is like a gap in my pedagogy and I want to learn a lot better, like how to reach kids and teach effectively through these online platforms, because I have ideas and I'm like starting to do things, but I don't think I've like a sound pedagogical framework of doing that right now.
So looking ahead, if the decision were yours to make, what would the 2020-2021 school year look like?
I think I would give parents the choice, as a lot of the districts are doing. Like, I think I would do a survey and offer in-person, hybrid, and completely digital models, and then, like, assign teachers based off what they felt most comfortable doing. So for teachers who just wanted to teach in-person, they could just teach in-person. For teachers who wanted to just do virtual, they could just do virtual. And then maybe for the hybrid kids, maybe they like see the in-person teacher, but then they have other assignments from the virtual teachers. But I think to me, that seems like the best way to differentiate for the needs of the adults in the profession, but also honoring kids and families and like what they need to be true from their education. Because the reality is like school also provides a huge like resource in our economy in terms of daycare. And so like if kids don't have a place to be, that's really going to be hard. And I also just think like developmentally for kids, they like have to have those social emotional learning pieces, and we can't really replicate that well virtually. And so I think that like as far as it's like safe to do so, I would try to do in person. I think if you look at studies in like Finland, South Korea, Denmark, there are models where nations have like taken coronavirus seriously and got their disease down and open schools in a safe and effective way. And so like I would hope that as a nation we could actually start to take this virus seriously, so that we could really prioritize our kids. It's crazy to me that we prioritize like opening beaches and tattoo parlors and liquor stores over schools. So that's what I would do if I had all the power.
What procedures, precautions, and protocols do you believe need to be in place for schools to resume in-person learning? Explain whether this is or is not plausible.
Again, I'm not a healthcare professional, so I'm not entirely sure, but I think for little kids, it's gonna be really hard to help them like socially distance, but they also have a lower disease load. And so thinking about like what class size works, like I think the pod model has been really effective, like in those same countries I named where kids are in like 12 group pods and like stay together. And like at least the South Korea study I'm thinking of, they showed that that's true for kids under like 10 or 11. And so I also think developmentally, like particularly for pre-K through two, like we need to do whatever we can to have those kids in person in school. because if kids don't get like number sense, the literacy skills are just like student skills at those ages, like it's going to be really hard to catch them up later. Like those are so critical. So I would put like all my resources for those 3 to 4 grade bands. I also think middle school developmentally, like kids need to be around other kids. That's when they're like starting to develop who they are and their identities and also like boundaries and things like that. And so I think school has an important function then. I think in the upper grades, like 9 through 12, I think they can do distance learning and we can train teachers to be effective distance instructors. So I guess, yeah, I would like have schools like all prioritize pre-K through 2 to be in person, maybe some hybrid, something for like 3 through 5 in person as much as possible for 6 through 8 and then distance for 9 through 12.
So the final question is, what lasting impacts will the COVID-19 pandemic have on the education sector?
I think it's going to be a really defining moment. Like, I think that we can either leverage this to change what's been broken in the education system for the last 2 centuries and really center our low-income students and our students of color and female students and gender nonconforming students and really think about, like, how is our instruction differentiated and honoring all these different identities, or we can continue to prioritize the like skills that we already have, which is just in-person lecturing, and we can really see like the end of the professional nature of our job. And so I think like if we position ourselves to adapt and change and be like leaders, then I can see like families actually like caring about what we're offering their students and really working with us. Whereas right now, I think the narrative is not necessarily as student-centered as it should be. And so I would love to see as a result of this that we really think through how can we make our teaching practices be entirely student-centered rather than teacher-centered. And I think if we're able to do that, I think COVID could have a really positive lasting impact on the profession.
Okay. Thank you for taking the time to do this interview and for sharing your thoughts.
You're welcome.